Hey, Damashek here. Make sure you check out the new episode of the Dave Damashek Football Program. Ike Taylor, Matt Harmon, Matt Franciscovich, and I breaking down what sort of truths emerged from the sea of lies that was week one of the preseason. Also, the Titans running game, what to make of that from a fantasy perspective and in reality. Jared Goff and Beyond, check it out on iTunes or NFL.com/podcasts.
The Around the NFL Podcast deeply respects the ambition of Trent Richardson.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Kevin Patra, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Ooh, good West, Patra.
Not bad.
I'm in the West chair, so I had to.
On the way up the stairs today, you could actually hear the butterflies. And Patrick's first time in the studio with us since it's been remodeled. Big moment in your career, yes
years.
Or no?
It's been years. Yes. Oh, top one moment in my career.
Wow. You don't have to make him feel even more nervous by bringing up the butterflies. I mean, he looks pretty at ease to me.
No pressure, no diamonds.
I think his hair, beard game is strong. You've got a lot of chest showing.
I was told I'm not allowed to button that button anymore, so.
By who? Your woman?
That is correct, Dan.
How's that going?
Phenomenal.
Do you think you're going to take that to the house?
I think that's on the we're on the right
wow.
track.
How old
we're
are you?
On the
now?
Right track. 31.
Okay, well, right there. See, you hit 30 and you start thinking about things.
Wait, what do you mean take it to the house? Like go all the way? You know what I'm saying? That's what
I
you
think. Mean? I think he was
yeah, go all the way,
different.
Not the go all the way you're thinking.
Get up to speed, Greg.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on in your marriage.
We've been all the way. If that's any news
Wait a
to
second.
You, if that's any news to you.
Wait a second.
Terrible.
Let's close the kimonos here. Mark, you wandered a little bit through the forest before you settled down. You settled down
still
later in your 30s.
Yes.
And not settled down as a person. You're still kind of out there a little bit, but in terms of getting married.
Got married.
But once you hit 30 as a guy, especially if you're in a long-term relationship. And especially if she's closing in on 30, sometimes you got to make a power play, and that seems where Patrick's heading right now.
My power play was marrying someone 7 years younger than me.
Mm. That is a power play.
That very wise.
Robin,
I didn't control it. That's just how the universe had it happen.
I like a happy Patrick, and I think he's been a happy guy the last 6 months, whatever it's been. Year.
Well, I would go crazy.
Happier.
I mean, I would say 80% of his comments on our instant messaging client usually is something along the lines of, that guy, or he sucks, or this or that.
Don't like people. Don't like the concept of people.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm generally against human beings.
And we wouldn't have it any other way. I don't want you to go soft.
I won't do it.
I don't want you to go from Jefferson Airplane to Starship.
I hope I don't want you to go soft is not a quote that we put on Twitter.
This is the Wednesday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. And yes, despite that killer Wes impression, Chris Wessling off today. And, Chris Wessling off day, he never really gets too far from the old pigskin. He was sending me Lamar Miller hype bunny tweets earlier today. I'm sure he's watching some film. But Wes will be back on Thursday. So Patra's sitting in for the rest of the week, and we also have to figure out we've got to have a night out with Patra.
Wes owes me beers, by the way.
He does. For what?
From the bet of the picks games last year.
Ooh, we will talk about that on tomorrow's show. That's exciting. Now I'm really excited about tomorrow's show. But this show is going to be a good one. Pre-show grade. Haven't had one of these in a while. And I've been thinking a lot about the pre-show grade, actually, guys, because you don't want to get stale and, same grade all the time. Nice bit, Dan. No, I'm going to start giving a pre-show grade that actually is commensurate with how good I think the show will be. So we're going to do a Hard Knocks report. Episode 2 of Hard Knocks. I love Hard Knocks.
You're the Hard Knocks guy.
Love writing about it. We're going to continue our division preview series. A little chunky, that series, in my opinion, but I enjoy the football talk.
Here it comes.
So NFC South, not my favorite division.
I love the NFC South.
We know that you do, but
yeah.
Dan's probably where a lot of fans are. The NFC South isn't a cauldron of excitement for most people.
And Patra's here in the studio, and that helps That alone is bumping it up a letter grade. Mm. Some good news. So pre-show grade, B minus.
Okay. We'll try to meet that.
I have to say, when I heard that Patrick was going to be in today, I was a little worried from what you guys have said over this time I've been here. He is wonderful.
Oh, of course.
What kind of comment is
that?
He's
great.
You trying to cause trouble over here?
No, I can. No, you guys said
like
on air.
Like we badmouth the guy?
No, you know, like you said, like he's moody or whatnot. He has been fantastic.
I don't think Patrick's moody. I just think he's at a resting, cantankerous place.
That's true.
I will take the 5 minutes that you've spent with him over the 4 years of communicating with him that we've had.
He hasn't. He's not soft like us out here in L.A. He's just a
salty
cold city boy.
That's one of Greg's, you know, longstanding bits is that L.A. is soft and the rest.
Well, no,
of the
it's not a bit.
It's unlike Martha's Vineyard, which was. You know,
it's not a bit.
Hard scrap.
I never lived there. It's never. It's not a bit. L.A. of course is soft.
Well,
it's okay.
It depends what parts of L.A. are you hanging out in. We could put you in some parts of L.A. that you might have a different opinion about. That's how the city operates.
Not hanging out in Compton. Is that what you're trying to say?
Many parts of L.A. I don't know.
All right.
For John.
Let's do some news.
Patrick, you're awesome.
Thanks, buddy.
This is why you lift all them weights. This is why you do all that.
Let's start with the poor Buffalo Bills. You know, I'm starting to think that Rex Ryan did something really devious, like maybe assassinated a world leader, something terrible in a prior life, because he keeps on stepping into some bad situations. The end of his Jets tenure was terrible, and now with the Bills, things keep on getting worse. Defensive tackle Marcell Dareus has been suspended 4 games for yet another violation of the NFL substance abuse policy. The team confirmed it in a statement. Greg, they were not happy. They did not stick up for their man or defend him, said that he put himself ahead of the team. Yikes. And Dareus explained, Mark Sessler, that he missed that test, and that's why he's positive. So he's not admitting that he was on anything. It's just he did not make the test.
I mean, if you're the Bills, on top of everything else, every podcast we're telling you about a new development in Buffalo that's a disaster in the making. And with this, it's more about the fact that it was a year ago that you gave him a 7-year contract with $60 million guaranteed. And he opened last season with a 1-game suspension. He's got another one now. And you never know where these people are in the program and what's going on with these players. But this is another example of the Bills giving a bizarre contract to a great player a year ago, but someone that, frankly, is just not, at this point, someone you can trust.
And always been a little touch and go.
Well, didn't have a good season. That's the bigger problem, you know. The suspension and not being available is obviously not what you want out of a guy making that much money. But he didn't play that well last year. He was okay. But he wasn't that big of a difference maker. He didn't make up for what was going on around him really at all. And the Bills in these sternly worded statements, I guess it's PR. That's just what it has to be. But it's kind of like at the end of the season when they released that statement that Rex and Whaley will be back. It's all right. Enough with the statements.
Mm. He might not have had a good year last year, but he certainly is the centerpiece of that defensive line.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question. And his losing him for 4 games just continues the streak. You know, Shaq Lawson's out for who knows how long. Reggie Ragland got hurt. Manny Lawson's going to miss a game for suspension. Carlos Williams is suspended. I mean, this is a team.
Ike Impale
got hurt. Like, this is a defense that Rex has planned, needs to be good again after a terrible season last year to keep his job.
Yeah.
And it's just decimated right off the bat before he gets even a chance to put anybody on the field.
Yeah, it was in January when Ryan was acknowledging that the Bills' defense, which is supposed to be, you know, he's the architect of this, was thin and needed depth, and everything has gone completely south since that statement.
I think Dareus, this is maybe the biggest one of all those. I know losing Ragland for the season hurts them bad, but Dareus is really important to that team. So even if it's just 4 games, it's a 3-man line. Their rookie Adolphus Washington looks pretty good, but it's a 3-man line, and he's anchoring, and that is a position they do not have anyone great behind him.
Would it surprise you, and I know it's been a while since, you know, Rex has felt like Rex, but all these different issues and all the adversity, if 6 weeks into the season that defense is playing well, Rex is schemed up right, and he actually ends up looking better with playing without all these guys, and it's kind of what he needed to get a little bit of his swagger back.
He has a chance to do something that no one would have expected, and it would have been great PR for Rex. I think they have a much, much better shot of being 1-5. You look at their schedule, it's not easy.
I mean, he's already said today he had the balls to say that this is still going to be a better defense than it was last year. With all these guys missing.
And I agree.
You agree that they're going to be a better defense with the Zach Brown?
Not going to take that
Preston
much.
Brown playing big roles. Lorenzo Alexander being your pass rusher.
Expectations going to be lower now for that team.
No. Yeah. I mean, until this suspension, I was still thinking I thought they had a chance. I think this is a top 10 offense last year that has their players back and a chance to be a lot better on defense. The reason I think the defense will be better is because it was so bad last year.
Well,
there's no reason to think that they can't be average.
Their back end will be very good.
And I think what Rex as a coach is talking about, there was revolt last year. I mean, it was everyone coming out in the press saying that Rex Ryan's scheme is too confusing, it doesn't work. They talk about everyone being on the same page now from a coach angle. That's already better no matter what the results are.
Here's a prediction I will make. The Bills bomb this year. Rex gets canned like they were supposedly going to do last year. And then all these guys are healthy next year, and there's a lot of talent on this on the team, and they bounce back, and they're in the playoffs the next year with a new coach. Mm. And Rex just got unlucky because this team got just decimated by injury.
I could see it. Moving on, you know, we were just talking about on this very podcast how terrible the depth is on the Eagles' depth chart at wide receiver behind Jordan Matthews. So they did something about it. On Tuesday, the Eagles acquired former Titans second-round pick Doriel Green-Beckham in a trade. The cost is a 2012 fifth-round pick. Dennis Kelly, who's a swing guard, tackle type, started two games for Philly a year ago. So there you go, a little bit of depth at wide receiver. Mark Sessler, do you think Green-Beckham is a guy that could help the Eagles?
I think it's so telling that the Titans traded they basically took anything to get Doriel Green-Beckham out the door, that the DGB experiment came to the point where they felt like this guy is one of the most physically talented guys to come into the league in the last 5 years, and we can't do anything with him. We'll take depth on our offensive line over this. And it was the Eagles that called him up. They're desperate for a wide receiver. The Eagles admit they've heard all the reports on this guy. Can't learn the playbook, is a little bit out in space, and they're willing to take it on. It's their
challenge. Why not?
Sure, why not? But I'm just saying from the Titans angle, it's all about the fact that they completely came to an end result with DGB.
Quickly, too.
Yeah.
Dan Helly, who's doing the Titans broadcast, said Marcus Mariota just didn't trust DGB.
That's not a good thing.
Which is not good. But if you're the Eagles, Howie Roseman sometimes acts a little more like a fantasy GM or like one of us. And I think that's in a good way. I don't think there's enough risk-taking when there's almost no downside to a trade like this. Dennis Kelly was getting their quarterbacks killed. You know, he might not have made that team. So they basically got a guy this talented for free, see what you can do with him. Why not?
Yeah, it's
what's the downside?
Flyer. I mean, he's going to play on the outside. Your best receiver, Jordan Matthews, is an inside guy, so he's not going to take those snaps. So he takes a Reuben Randle, who's getting killed the last week in the press, who's getting murdered. So he takes those snaps, and you have a guy with some high upside. I mean, I don't think we should expect him to put up huge numbers in the
No, he might
offense.
Not even start. Wait, might not even play.
Well, that's start. The thing. I mean, it's all wonderful, but it's also a player that completely fizzled out in Tennessee because they couldn't trust him to even get on the field. Oh. He was falling down the depth charts.
How much do you put on this on Malarkey and his staff? I mean, he said today it just never clicked in with him. Well, how much is not clicking in late? How much is on the player and how much is on the coaching staff?
This is what happens when you change your GMs and you change your coaches every year. A different GM just last year, you know, took him. Our old friend Dan's favorite GM in the league, Rustin Webster.
My favorite GM.
You loved Rustin. You thought he was electric at the combine.
I did like him. I liked him so much that I completely forgot anything about him. Is the way he looked, the way he acted, the job he did, probably a bad job. Let's move on. The Pro Football Hall of Fame announced Tuesday that Cowboys owner Jerry Jones and former NFL commissioner Paul Tagliabue were selected as contributor finalists for election for the Hall's 2017 class. Both interesting names. Tagliabue was the commissioner from 1989 to 2006 before Roger Goodell took over. He succeeded an iconic person in Pete Rozelle. And I would say with Tagliabue, it's almost like he's sandwiched between two more notable guys. Goodell has been such a controversial lightning rod type figure in the sports world, and Rozelle is famous for growing the game of football. And then you have Jerry Jones, of course, who has owned the Cowboys since '89. And Greg, not only has he been one of the faces of the NFL and one of the, whether a hero, a villain, whatever he is, Also instrumental in what's been going on behind the scenes as the NFL has become the world's or the country's biggest sport.
I think that's the only reason he's – not the only reason, but it's the main reason why he's a Hall of Fame finalist is for what he's done behind the scenes, whether it's helping to bring the Rams to L.A., whether it's, you know, creating new revenue streams with the way that he did sponsorships. It's boring stuff. Television deals, lockout, all that stuff. He's one of the guys that have been the owners that helps run the league. Plus, you give him – you know, you count the three titles. And I don't know. These two guys I don't think are rubber stamps to get in, though. Usually, if you get this far, you're named as a finalist, you get in. Wouldn't be surprised if either one of them or even both still didn't get in.
Well, what would be holding Tagliabue back? I mean, you're
because he got shot down – 5 or 6 times and then wasn't even making the finalist spot when he was going up against players. So I think there's probably some case against him that, okay, just because you're a commissioner, you get to be a Hall of Famer?
Well, I guess for me, the Hall of Fame, we've talked about the Hall of Fame three shows in a row at this point.
Well, I thought
we
weren't doing this. I was surprised that we did. I thought you said we weren't doing it.
Who cares? Keep talking.
I don't know. If you're not going to put a commissioner in, and Tagliabue was not a – there wasn't an issue with Tagliabue. He did a fine job during one of the
Labor
biggest
piece.
Growth periods in the NFL's history. I don't know why it's not getting rubber stamped.
I think the current climate around concussions and when we're finding out what happened during that time period, I think that's one reason a lot of people would point to say that he...
Well, then, you know what? They keep bringing Tagliabue in behind the scenes to solve current league issues, down with people as a steady voice. So if you don't trust him and he's not a Hall of Famer, then stop doing that.
He certainly got along with players better. There was no... work stoppage, the relationship with players was probably better. He grew the game. There's 4 extra teams. And more than anything, he probably saved the Saints in professional football in New Orleans at a time when Tom Benson was trying to get it out of New Orleans. And I think people in New Orleans know that, and I think that's one major thing that's in Tagliabue's favor for this class.
Do you think, one last thing, if Jerry Jones were to get in, would it be the official time for him to step away from the Cowboys in his current role, because he's been shifting
you
towards
wish.
That for a while.
You wish.
What, as GM?
Well, no, for Stephen Jones to take over. Stephen Jones does
seems like he has a
much
big role
more
in
than
it
he
now.
Than he did in the past.
It's coming. Jerry's not a young man anymore. Good conversation, guys. Finally.
I know we're going to be hearing from Dan after the show. I can
feel what?
It. I
no.
don't know. I just I can
not at all.
Sense it.
What? It was good. It was good. Know. Finally. The Miami Dolphins' extensive renovations on their home facility, the renovations that were deemed necessary for them to ever host a Super Bowl again, they got it done. They paid big, big money to do it. And now, to help, I would think, offset some of those costs, they have sold the naming rights to that old building once again. How many names has the building had? Pro Player Park, Landshark Stadium. A decent domestic lager, by the way.
Yeah.
That was actually a real name of that stadium.
Landshark Stadium.
That.
Joe Robbie.
Joe Robbie Stadium, which is kind of how I always remember it.
Yeah.
All through the years.
Whatever. What it was something different.
Oh, it was Dolphins. It was Dolphins Stadium and Dolphins Stadium.
Mm. I mean, come on.
And now it is Hard Rock Stadium. Ow! Look out! Rock and roll is here to stay. Did you guys know that the Hard Rock Cafe was still around?
Well, I was going to say, if you want to talk about a time when the Hard Rock Cafe was much cooler, it was when Tagliabue was the commissioner. It seems very old to me.
They still have enough money to sponsor a stadium?
This seems a little bit strange to me, and I was wondering if the resident Dolphins fan in this building, Handsome Hank, of course, Henry Hodgson, if he could let us know what his thoughts were on the new stadium in general, just see where he's at as he moves into his new place within the company. Henry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello, Dan.
Hey, have you heard about Hard Rock Stadium? Ow! Bring the babes and the beers and all the fun.
That's very exciting, yeah. This, I think, is the 7th name that Joe Robbie Stadium has had.
We were just talking about that.
My favorite since Landshark Stadium.
See, I remembered that one too. So I just want to say, like, and you get on me sometimes, just to pull back the curtain a little bit, Henry, in his role as the director of programming,
You're really opening the kimono here.
Opening the kimono a little bit here, and you know, getting below the treetops and letting people know that Henry has pulled me aside and said I'm a little too anti-Dolphins. And you've
admitted to it
a little bit, you know.
But you're a Jets fan.
Yeah, old habits die hard. But sometimes the Dolphins make it too easy. And when Gloria Stefan and Fergie sign off on Hard Rock Stadium, I don't know. It's just kind of a cheesy name. Yes or no?
It definitely is. And this is a great bit by you as well. I'm going to give this a solid 7 out of 10.
Greg has buried his face into his palm, so I don't think he likes the bit either.
No, I like it. I feel bad for Pitbull, you know. The man most associated with Miami and Gloria Estefan, part owners, and they're not Hard Rock, and they're calling the stadium Hard Rock.
Henry, do you think, because you're moving up the ranks, we always view you as a commissioner in waiting, potentially. If you ever reach that, would you kick out all these B-list celebrities and get some real ownership in there?
I think that could be a good move. That could be a good move. I mean, I don't know how much day-to-day Serena Williams actually has input on you know, some of the more important decisions around the building. But
see, Serena Williams is the most accomplished athlete that's been in that building in 30 years.
Oh,
wow.
Greg went there.
Ouch. That wasn't me, by the way, Henry.
No, I realized that was Greg.
Henry, one question for you. I know, as Dan mentioned, that you can, every time we turn around, you seem to be flying up the corporate ladder. Do you feel, do you wake up at times with us? Are you drunk with power, I'm asking? Do you feel just drunk with power at this point?
No more than you when Greg goes on vacation.
All right, fair enough. Well, Greg is not my supervisor anymore.
Not any longer, but I know when David Ely goes off to wherever it is that he goes, you'll be there ready to take control.
Henry makes a good point. Once Ely goes on a vacation, will Sessler be subservient to Ely in the same way he was with Greg, reporting things back to him, different slights towards the boss? Will that happen with Ely? Mark.
Right, and has Mark already done the work that, you know, he did behind the scenes to ensure that he was the number two to Greg, you know, working his way past you, Dan, and past Wes?
Yeah, it certainly happened.
Is he doing the same kind of snaky things in the background to make sure he's Ely's number two?
Nice attempt, Henry. I'll remind you, it's a case-by-case basis, and Greg needed to be dealt with in a certain way, and Ely in a very different way.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you will have sniffed out the right way to do that.
Well, Henry, I thank you for taking this time in between high-leverage corpo meetings. I will, as a gift to you to celebrate Hard Rock Stadium, I'll send you one of those old jackets they used to have with the leather sleeves and the Hard Rock Cafe.
Hey, John, I do have one other thing for you.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard, but I'm from the United Kingdom.
I've picked that up.
And I've had a few tweets in the last week about your British accent, and I think there's kind of a move underway to try and stop you from doing it ever again.
You know, that's always been kind of just under the radar, but now I think it's starting to hit the mainstream to really shut me down. I think it was, right. Who is it, Clive?
Clive Walford.
Clive Walford? Clive Walford.
Because Clive Walford sounds like a British person, or your impression of a British person, but he also doesn't sound very intelligent. Maybe had a couple of shots to the head.
He could have fell off his bike or something. Well, you're right.
Right.
To be honest, though, Dan, I was on a plane listening to that at 6 a.m.
Yes.
yesterday, and I was trying not to laugh out loud. So.
There you go. And Patra is a very serious guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that, Henry?
That's a good point. I have no comeback for that. If Kevin Patra is there and he likes it, then who am I to stand in the way?
Agreed.
All right, I'm going to play off some hardcore rock and roll, and you can do some air guitar in your office.
Thank you.
There he goes, Handsome Hank, the new vice president of international at NFL media conglomerate. No longer the DOP. All these roles changing. Some things change, some things never do.
Very powerful man.
That's what's happening in the news. All right, it is time for the greatest Greg Rosenthal football television series in the history of the medium.
There's no doubt about that.
Hard Knocks Report, Episode 2. And I will, you know, listen, I'm a big fan of the show, but I'm no shill for the show. I think it's a little slow out of the gate so far. I think I wouldn't say that this season, now 40% through, is right now heading toward the Hall of Fame or the Mount Rushmore of Hard Knocks seasons. A little
five,
bit dry.
Five episodes or six? It's five?
I believe there are five episodes, yeah.
Gotcha.
It's certainly interesting, and I guess my big picture takeaway, and I wrote about this in my Hard Knocks recap, which you can check out at NFL.com/hardknocks, that Jeff Fisher, especially after watching All or Nothing this summer, where Bruce Arians ran, to me, was a surprisingly tight ship. And Arians was a more intense guy than I realized. Fisher, to me, it's a very kind of loose atmosphere from where I was, my vantage point on the couch. Different, for sure, than Bruce Arians, who would, you know, went after guys hard, got very angry. Fisher, even when he had his now infamous rant about 7-9 last week, it didn't seem as natural coming out of him. And you get the vibe watching the team. And Greg, I know you watched the episode. If you picked up on that at all, as well. And I know it's NFL films there. They're going to highlight some of the lighter moments, camp for entertainment value. But it does seem pretty loose at UC Irvine.
That's fair. He's a Southern California guy, Jeff Fisher. So maybe that's
born in Culver City, where we are right now.
You don't think of him as kind of a loose guy like that, lighthearted, but he seems kind of chill the more you get to watch him. And some of his position coaches are the guys playing the bad guys. Mike Waffle.
My God,
you know,
Mike Waffle.
He is one of the heroes. And
come
I hope,
back to us, Mike.
I hope there's even more. Oh, give me a break. Stay who you are. By the way, I would never dare to criticize Mike Waffle.
No, do not.
He could come after me and kill me.
Because he is he's the Marine from Full Metal Jacket. This is an actual
And you
line.
Know who's the best players on their team, the best unit over the last 5 years? The defensive line who Mike Waffle's coaching.
Okay, I mean, he didn't give the DNA that made Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn.
I'm just saying, I'd be afraid to let that guy down.
That. You don't know that.
That's true, Patrick. An actual line from Mike Waffle on Tuesday, and get ready, this is going to need some bleeping. Irish, sorry.
Keeping Irish active with the beeps today.
Knock him the back! Put the quarterback on the ground! Go celebrate that you! And you're like, oh, that must be from the preseason game, and he was pissed off at the Cowboys. No, he's yelling at his own guys. It's a practice. He just dropped an FU, which seemed pretty heavy. But anyway, getting back to the general vibe of the camp, you know, when you start saying these things, it's a laid-back, loose atmosphere, Kevin Patrick, and then the dreaded, ooh, they're running a country club. I don't want to say that. That's unfair. I'm not close enough to the team to say that. But when Kenny Britt and Brian Quick overturn in their golf cart and almost kill themselves, you would think, and I was thinking Bruce Arians.
Video of that is quite ridiculous.
Yeah, it was jarring. You were not expecting that. You're like, okay, we've seen this Hard Knocks scene before, where guys are just like driving around having fun, and then suddenly, how lucky were they? Not lucky, but that the camera was there, and it's just like, bam.
Yeah, and Kenny Britt almost gets crushed to death.
Oh, it half landed on him, right?
Like, it did. He got very lucky, and they're both kind of laughing during the admonishment process. I thought that was a little interesting too.
Yeah, I thought that was weird that Britt was laughing as they stood him up, being like, you guys could have been here.
Yeah, and this came, and we were saying maybe it was a little unfair. Dion Long got cut last week for having a girl in his dorm, and he was immediately sent out the door, an undrafted wide receiver. This crashing of the moped situation came shortly after they showed Fisher saying, guys, be careful on these things. I don't want anybody doing any funny business. And then these guys are like racing like Fast and the Furious.
I mean, I am behind because I did not see this episode yet.
You read the recap, though.
I read the recap today.
You did.
Question for you. It seemed one of the briefer recaps from you. And I was wondering, is this series in general a little low wattage? Because the first, I love Hard Knocks, but episode one was a hard 6 out of 10 for me. Like, I felt like from the minute they announced the LA Rams, I thought, here's the five things I know are going to happen in episode one, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they all happen. It's like, are they branching into new areas where you're learning about people that you didn't know?
Did you say low wattage because last year was the Texans and Watt was on?
I did not.
Possibly. I was trying to be economical. I did make some cuts. But, yeah, it wasn't like the words are pouring out, because there wasn't something jumping out at me so far. But I do – the one – if this season, if nothing else, this season will give us this quote from Jeff Fisher on William Hayes, who we learned last year was the guy that didn't believe in dinosaurs. But it is now we're learning about his belief in a mythical sea creature that makes him even more strange.
Will Hayes absolutely believes and is totally convinced that there are mermaids and they do exist. Okay. As a matter of fact, I remember him getting real excited about the potential for moving out here because he knew that he would be closer to mermaids here on the West Coast.
Wow. Sessler hates that.
I'll give it.
No, I just I think it's like, it just feels. Is it contrived at all? Do you think he really?
I don't
think.
No, William Hayes. I don't think it's contrived at all because this has been a thing for years. He also doesn't believe in dynasty. I mean, if you listen to him arguing,
I mean, the starting quarterback doesn't know where the sun rises. Right. This guy thinks that mermaids are flying around the sea. What is up with this team?
If you listen to him, his arguments for why he believes it, like. He's like, what about the dinosaurs in the sea? And they're like, the meteor hit. He's like, but they were underwater.
Water don't catch on fire.
He was like, you know, crocodile. You know, I don't know. The whole thing was insane.
His reasoning for why mermaids could exist is because scientists find new organisms in the ocean every day. But then he turns against science when it comes to the dinosaur stuff. So that is all fun, but. I love this show. I'm going to watch. It doesn't matter, you know, whether the show is having an off season or a good season. I still enjoy it. It's like pizza, but maybe a little bit of a slow start. Jared Goff reminds me a lot, by the way. Even though he's from Northern California, he reminds me a lot of Mark Sanchez in the 2010 Hard Knocks season of Jets, where he's young, kind of cocky, a little bit goofy, and seemed immature. Still has a way to go to kind of really earn the respect of his teammates. But he's still the hot shot on the roster.
I think we can forget how young these people are and what we were like at that same age. And it's easy to jump on Goff for what happened in the first episode, at least. But, I mean, this is like a 21, 22-year-old kid. And they talked about Fisher. They said there were some whispers that the Rams weren't into Wentz because Wentz was this A-type personality and that it wasn't Fisher's personality, that Fisher and Goff were much more – similar types in terms of being laid
that
back.
Makes sense.
So Goff has a 7-9 personality. Is that what you're saying?
I like
that
Case,
I did not say.
It's made me like Case Keenum more though. He's exactly kind of what you'd figure Case Keenum would be, but he's what you would want in a starting quarterback welcoming in Goff. And I don't know. He's also the all-time leader in yards, touchdowns, and completions in NCAA history. Poor Case Keenum.
Doesn't this always
a little respect? Who would
yeah,
have known
I was
that?
Surprised to see
Who would
that
ever
or hear that. But there are patterns if you watch a show every summer. It seems like if you're a veteran backup quarterback, you're in a good spot to come off as pretty cool on the show.
Yeah.
Matt Moore a couple of years ago, Mark Brunell in that Jets season. They get to be the older guy that, you know, imparts wisdom and is a little more laid back because he knows it's not all on his shoulders, and it usually comes off well. Anyway, any other thoughts, guys, on the Hard Knocks report?
Well, I enjoyed the write-up. You saved me. I would not know a thing that happened otherwise.
I'm just glad America's gotten to meet Rob Boris, the Rams offensive coordinator. Is anyone more under the radar for a guy who's running an entire offense, probably with no help from, Jeff Fisher?
How do you follow Frank Cignetti, buddy?
It's tough. Yeah. Frank Cignetti. And one last note in praise of NFL Films. It's amazing the bottomless nature of their vault. In Mount Laurel, Ian Seau is a undrafted defensive end, or maybe he's a late round pick. I can't remember, but he's the nephew of Junior Seau. And what other films entity could do what they did in this episode, which was not only they talk about how he looked up to his uncle, but then they cut to NFL Films archive footage of Junior Seau watching Ian Seau as a boy playing in his football league from the sidelines. It's like, wow.
Yeah. And, like, the shots.
Awesome.
That was awesome. The shots of Jeff Fisher at the original Rams training camp.
That mullet.
91.
Wow.
Yeah, people destroyed each other at training camp in 1991. I know the league has a long way to go in player health and safety, but for strides in that department, look no further than the difference in camps.
Yeah, then they would practice all year long that way, too. It was a completely different type of football player.
All right. Let's move on, guys. Oh, one thing before we move on. I just want to remind everyone – big announcement. Next week, the third annual Around the NFL Fantasy Extravaganza. Kevin.
I'm pumped.
From the outside perspective of someone that's not in the studio much, how excited are you about this year's edition?
Probably at least a 5.5 out of 10.
That's wow. Very good. That's solid. No, that's good.
In Patra's world, that's, if you know, bell curve.
Get
here,
that
that's
in school,
high.
It's an F.
Well.
Failure.
Well,
but if when Patra was eight,
you got a
if you asked him about
you got a grade on a curve.
Okay.
Patra on Christmas Eve, he would have said, 6.5.
Yeah, 1 point. To 10. How excited are you about your lady friend?
Ooh, this is a big question. Be careful.
I'm not answering that. I'm actually not going
to
answer.
She going to listen to the show?
No, but on the off shot that.
Why wouldn't she listen?
Well, why wouldn't you answer a 10? It's obvious.
No, I'm just not going to do it. Because then my reputation's on the line as a heart. I'm just going to not.
It's
I'm
a six.
Decline to answer.
It's a six.
I'm going to decline to answer.
6.5.
Declining.
Six.
To answer.
It's a fantasy show coming in just below Lady Friend.
This is like a coach that won't announce the starting quarterback. You only don't say, you know, not unless you have something to hide.
It's like Joe Philbin before the London game.
Maybe right, I do, exactly. Greg. Maybe I do.
All right. Interesting. A little – some look, Greg, incredulous over
Yeah,
there.
He is not
I
happy.
That.
Greg likes to give relationship advice.
Division preview time. Number three. We've done the NFC East. We've done the NFC North. Now the NFC South and then the NFC West. And then we got to do it all again with the AFC. This time we're talking about, yes, the South Division, which has
– Your enthusiasm is really going to help with the listeners. I'm sure they're just like, great.
Now, the listeners
Why, what's wrong
very
with
very up
it?
And down with it. I don't like when there's a lot – you know, like when you were a college kid and you had to write a 37-page term paper and you're just at the beginning of it? It just feels like this mountain that you have to climb. I'm only like 10 pages into the term paper.
I feel you.
That's all. I like it, though. I like talking football with you guys.
Oh,
we just got a long way to go.
The look on Greg's face is just absolute disdain for everything that just came out of Dan's mouth.
Well, it was the fact that you feel the need to even say the words, I like talking football with you guys. Really, I do. Like that would be in question. That's troubling.
Henry, by the way, just sent me a no, we don't use that word. And I am. Here are the stadium names in Miami through the years. Joe Robbie, Pro Player Park, Pro Player Stadium, Dolphins Stadium, Dolphin Stadium, Landshark Stadium. Ooh, this one goes under the radar. Sun Life Stadium.
That's where they played the Super Bowl. That's where – was that the Saints?
All right,
the
great,
Super Bowl?
Down.
Saints Bears.
No,
Saints
Colts.
Saints Colts.
Yeah,
Colts. No.
No,
it was Colts winning the Super Bowl.
Colts Bears.
Oh, and it was raining.
They were both there. We're both right.
Colts okay, you're twice. Right. You're right. Okay, everybody's right. And finally, Hard Rock Stadium. Okay. NFC South, who wants to start today? Mark, do you want to start today?
Or
would
Let's
you
have
like
Mark.
Sure, I will.
All right, yeah. Mark will start today. In the NFC South, Greg, what are the teams in the NFC South?
The Atlanta Falcons, New
Correct.
Orleans Saints,
Correct.
Tampa Bay Correct. Buccaneers, and the defending NFC Championship, your Carolina Panthers.
That was good, Greg. Very professional, real broadcaster. Mark, you will get us going with the breakout star of the NFC South in the year 2016.
I'm going to go with Devin Funchess, Panthers' second-year wide receiver. I mean, part of it's just reading the tea leaves. One beat reporter after the next, without any question, calling him the MVP of training camp. Ron Rivera said, I don't even want to say who the MVP is because I don't want to jinx him, but it's clear he's talking about Devin Funchess. And it has a lot to do with Kelvin Benjamin has, you know, they're bringing him along very slowly. His conditioning has not been 100%. And Funchess has played the role of number one wide receiver, going up against number one cornerbacks in practice, and in the game as well, caught a touchdown pass. But they just said that him and Cam Newton, one long connection after the next, that he's completely become a more versatile player, totally trustworthy, they love his offseason. And so for me, because, you know, maybe Benjamin doesn't get off to the roaring start that some would expect, Funchess, who's been there all along for months and months, is installed as that guy that Cam Newton can really look to. And it speaks to me, a big season, I would say 10-plus touchdowns would not be out of the question at all.
My concern there would be, where does he fit in once Kelvin Benjamin is back 100%? Ted Ginn Jr. is not exactly a slot receiver, so how does the trio, how
do the
snaps
shake
out?
Those are the twin towers on the outside. That's the thing about Dave Gettleman. He has a vision.
And then what do you do with
other
field stretcher?
Devin Funchess looks like a tight end. So does Benjamin. Benjamin's weight thing has slipped under the radar a little bit. I mean, this is a guy who's had weight problems going back years and years. He's got weight conditioning problems now. He's a key part of that team. And I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. I think it's set up for Devin Funchess to be kind of a co-number one with Benjamin.
That was the whole goal back when they drafted him.
Yeah.
Second round. When they reached – so a lot of people thought they reached when they took him that high.
Well, we'll see.
A former tight end playing wide receiver, that's an adjustment.
We need to see it happen, first of all. But it makes sense with Cam Newton, too, that he's a guy who's not afraid to throw it into tight windows. Not a guy who's going to be open by a ton, but a big guy you can throw it up high to and he'll catch it.
Patra, your breakout star.
We're sticking with the Carolina Panthers. I'm going Shaq Thompson. I think, you know, he had 50 tackles last year. He played limited to start, but I think with him, Thomas Davis, and Luke Kuechly, that's going to be the fastest linebacking trio. It already is the fastest linebacking. It's going to be even faster. I think he can cover tight ends whenever needed, and I think that's going to give them versatility. He can rush the passer. He's going to bring a whole dimension. I think his speed is going to be dynamic this year, and that's one reason I think they're not so worried about the cornerback position, because I think they can. They believe that he can cover some of those gaps in their zone scheme, and he can stay on the field and cover a bigger, a slower wide receiver or a tight end in those nickel situations, so they're not worried as much about the depth at the corner.
I was watching the Ravens-Panthers preseason game, and they talked about Shaq Thompson as their defensive MVP of this training game. So that draft for Dave Gettleman is looking outstanding right now. And against the Ravens, they were moving him all over the field. They love to do all sorts of stuff with him, and he did it well, and he's incredibly fast, and I think you're exactly right. I agree with you.
If Shaq Thompson takes a step up like that,
at front seven,
and Thomas Davis
forget
is within 10% of where he was last year, that's not just the, you know, fastest linebacker group this year. That's one of the best linebacker groups of the last 15 years, because Luke Kuechly's the best in the league. Thomas Davis is in that range, and if Shaq Thompson is a Pro Bowl type player, that's an insane linebacker group.
Good start, guys. A lot of pressure on me to keep it up. I will go with a tight end in New Orleans named Kobe Fleener.
Wow.
Who, well, I know Kobe Fleener is not a very popular guy. It seems like a lot of people think he is a flawed football player. But I don't think you need to be a perfect you don't have to be Rob Gronkowski to thrive in New Orleans at the tight end position. I think Drew Brees, despite some reports to the contrary, maybe his arm strength is a little diminished, was still a monster producer last year. Benjamin Watson, who, by the way, you want to pick one person who is not going to come close to their numbers from the year before. Ben Watson ain't sniffing 800 yards, eight
not
touchdowns,
in Baltimore?
100 targets. I don't think so. I think that
I'll put
he was
a sandwich
never that
on
guy.
That.
What?
I think he'll top his yardage from last year in Baltimore.
Okay. I'll take
sandwich.
You got me.
Can I take your sandwich?
No.
You want
can
that?
We take note of that?
I want that.
Can you note
just
that,
stand.
Irish? Thank you. Okay. Anyway.
Wow. We'll Rocket Gilmore.
Agree to disagree.
Okay.
Dennis
but
Pitta.
That's not even the heart of my point here. It's more the idea of I think Watson is, while a nice player and seems like a very good guy, not the most dynamic football player. Kobe Fleener is an offensive talent, maybe not a great blocker, but great hands, can run like the devil. And with Drew Brees and some emergent talent around him, I think Kobe Fleener is going to be a 1,000-yard receiver and put him in the top 10 tight end conversation, maybe higher.
Wow.
It's been a great position in New Orleans,
that's
like you said. So
main argument,
that, yeah, that's a good way to connect the dots. It's bad news for making the leap candidate Josh Hill from a year ago, who I basically spent, you know, 3 days, 10,000 words writing about a ghost.
But that was a stretch. Like, in retrospect, you can look, because everyone thought, all right,
he was an
whoever fills
guy.
That.
He was an off-season
yeah,
guy.
Whoever
well,
fills
was, he,
that slot will get those targets
right.
and produce. But I think Fleener comes in with an actual pedigree as an offensive talent.
The problem with Fleener, I think, for this is that I think the receivers are so much better now that that's where some of those balls are going to go.
Are we concerned?
He was a great route runner in Indy, and those things will carry over. I don't think he's going to just all of a sudden be great at getting open.
Are we right. concerned the Colts wanted Dwayne Allen over Kobe Fleener without no. looking back?
Yeah, they
I just
to
think
pick
that's
one.
How they're
to pick one. I'm going to pick a more obvious big-name guy as my breakout player, Jameis Winston. If there's a quarterback in the league that I think has the best chance to improve this season dramatically, it's Jameis Winston. You line up, and I'm taking this idea from the Football Outsiders Almanac, which is a great work. You should check it out. If you look at his stats versus Andrew Luck's stats as rookies, they're very similar, and Winston's are better. And when I think of those two quarterbacks, I think they're pretty similar. They were in similar situations. I think Winston's far more athletic and better escaping the pass rush and running a little bit than he was given credit for. Certainly, just like Andrew Luck, I think he sees the field in anticipation and his mind is on fire. And I love Mariota, and there's no need to compare the two, but if I'm picking one quarterback, I think can make that leap to a top 7-8 type of quarterback in a big second-year leap, I think it's Jameis Winston.
I know Chris Wessling is a huge fan of, maybe not as big a fan as he is as Marcus Mariota, but he watched every snap and came away thinking that Winston has that type of ability. He's in better shape now. He lost some of that baby fat. Mm-hmm. Maybe this all translates to a leap. I think Mike Evans could be better this year, and I think that will help Jameis Winston.
I mean, when you're just looking for all the traits in a quarterback that you want, whether it's intangible or tangible, to me, he is that guy. And I think he showed it even more than Winston. They're both great, but I feel really confident.
When they were surprised by how much of a leader he was. When you watch Jared Goff on Hard Knocks and you realize how hard it is as a quarterback to command these veterans, that even by a month in, they were like, this guy gets it. And the way he treated his offseason makes sense.
That's true.
Actually, Winston was going to be one of my underrated, under-the-radar stories that we'll get to later. I mean, I just think that even in this room, I mean, everyone talks about Mariota, but nobody talks. I mean, where is the Winston's going to be great in year two storyline nationally?
I think being in Tampa's helped him in a weird way because he is under the radar for a number one quarterback who pretty much lived up to the billing right off the bat.
That's fair. All right, moving on. Biggest concern in the NFC South, Mark.
I'm going to leave a couple things like the Saints defense sitting out there if someone else wants to talk about it. For me,
wow, you just totally like shot that one down now, though. It's got no glory anymore.
Well, that wasn't my goal, but that's how show business works.
Wings. You clipped the wings of the Saints defense one.
That's what I was planning to do, but yeah. I want to talk about the fact that, you know, Dan, you've been predicting the Tom Brady fall off a cliff season.
No, I'm not. Let's make sure we have this right, that he's going to go into a gradual decline.
Well, all right. I mean, we're all gradually declining. So
the world is gradually
I thought it was a stronger prediction than that. And then my concern is the same thing with Drew Brees. I mean, they act like this guy is just going to keep turning out these seasons over and over and over. It is a team that is not well-built, I don't think, overall. Their defense has issues. And there's still a team that's going to have to win shootouts. And is Drew Brees, who had health issues to some degree last year, going to be able to last? I think if that doesn't happen, A, you don't have a clear heir apparent to him. You just latched on to Sean Payton for another X amount of years, and suddenly, if Brees is not at the all-pro level, that team completely collapses upon itself.
I'm not as much worried about him collapsing as much as his offensive line in front of the interior of that offensive line.
Well, that's how quarterbacks get hurt, though.
But I don't get that. He's got one of, if not the best left tackles in the league. Right. He's got a great center. He's got a first-round pick playing at one of the guard spots, Andrews Pete. It's like,
on the other side.
All right, that's pretty good.
That good.
I mean, that's more than a lot of teams have on the offensive line. And I am so high on the young talent around him, Michael Thomas and Brandon Cooks, and the Mark Ingram, I think, is underrated, C.J. Spiller, Tim Itoher. I just think he has so many players, Kobe Fleener.
Way more weapons.
The defense might be terrible. We'll see. But I just think he'll put up a monster year. He looked pretty good at the end of last year.
Mark, I will save my counter to that for our next category. Mm. Kevin Patra, breakout, biggest concern.
I'm going to go with the Falcons pass rush because I think that the rest of the team, I think, it couldn't be solid. Let's assume that the rookie linebackers are as good as we think they could be. Neal on the back end as safety is as good as he can be. The offensive line plays up to billing. Matt Ryan has one of his better seasons after a couple of mediocre ones. The pass rush, are they going to really get to the quarterback? Outside of Vic Beasley, are we expecting a 75-year-old Freeney to come back and...
It's amazing he's still playing at this.
He only played eight games last year. He played really well, but I mean, is he going to play a whole season? And who else do they have that's going to get to the quarterback?
They can try to sign OC Ubanyor again. I mean, that's what they do. They go out and sign the person that should have retired 3 years ago.
They signed Derek Shelby, which I thought was a chance worth taking. Looked pretty good in Miami, young guy.
I just don't. I don't see where if the back end is so good.
Good linebackers.
Like I said, let's assume that those. But if you don't ever touch the quarterback with Cam Newton, Drew Brees, Jameis Winston in your own division, they're going to pick you apart. You have to get after the quarterback, and we're not even sure. Their top rusher right now had 4 sacks as a rookie. So we don't know if they can get back to the quarterback. This is the team that could, in my opinion, threaten for the division with all their other parts. But if they can't get to the quarterback, it's going to ruin everything.
Let me kind of piggyback with mine because – I don't think they're a threat in the division, and I think it's because they have issues on both sides of the ball. I'm a little worried about this Kyle Shanahan experience in Atlanta. It didn't go too smoothly last year, and there were reports that Matt Ryan struggled a little bit with Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan, for a guy that gets a lot of compliments, has bounced around a lot in this league, and they weren't that great last year. I think Matt Ryan kind of plateaued as a quarterback at his age 32 season. We kind of know who he is at this point. And I don't think they did enough to help him in the offseason. I really think Mohamed Sanu is a guy that's going to disappoint there. Julio Jones is still a genius at his craft and is going to have a monster season. But I don't know if they're going to score enough points to offset issues on other aspects of the team. I think this is an offense that could be a problem, and it could cost Mr. Shanahan another job at the end of the year.
I had written the same idea down as a possible underrated storyline, that this offense was the problem last year. It's weird that Matt Ryan had such a bad year in a year that the offensive line was pretty good. The running game, for the most part, was pretty good, and yet this team was 23rd in offense in Football Outsiders DVOA, which is it was a decline, and which I can't quite wrap my head around it. Matt Ryan is a huge, huge part, making big mistakes. So
terrible.
I don't know what was missing there. I think they have room to improve, but it's underrated that was just as big a problem as the defense, because you expected the defense to be mediocre. They were last in the league the year before that. It was surprising the offense was so bad.
The only thing I disagree with, I think Sanu will actually play well in this offense. Even in the preseason game against the Redskins, wasn't out there long, made two catches, seems an integral part of the deal. I think he's an upgrade from where Roddy White was a year ago.
I guess this is my question. Anybody's really an upgrade over Roddy White in 2016.
But then it's an upgrade for your passing game.
But right. I'm saying, but what did we see from Mohamed Sanu over the greater part of what was three or four years in Cincinnati? I think that now going with a quarterback who more or less is kind of at the same level, also with an elite wide receiver, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, why are we all going to see all of a sudden see this jump?
I think he was up and down in Cincinnati, but if you look at the season two seasons ago when A.J. Green was out of the lineup a bunch and he was forced to go into a number one role, he had big games. He put up big numbers. And I'm not saying as a number one receiver, but he's in the perfect place as a number two.
I feel like the same thing, the opposite happened in another stretch with A.J. Green where Sanu didn't do anything when he was in the lead.
If you go look at 2014 when Sanu was in there, he had the best games of his career when he was spotlighted as the number one guy.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. Greg.
Well, you guys weren't excited because it's the NFC North day. It's another
NFC South, actually.
NFC South day. And my underrated storyline is how great this division is. I know I've made this rant before, so I'll keep it quick. But this is a division where the quarterback play, that's what we all like watching. It's at least what I like watching.
This is your biggest concern?
No. I thought we're an underrated storyline. I don't even know what's going on anymore. I'm making it.
All right, go ahead.
You happy.
His concern is that everyone
else. Why doesn't he just start underrated storylines?
That's fair.
There you go. Keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
I've said it all, that any one of these teams could win the division. I believe that. There's not a crazy difference between the top and the bottom. I think it's exciting to see what the Panthers do. That was going to be my biggest concern. Let's put them all together. My concern about the Panthers, like, how do they handle being a team that was 15-1? Things are going to be harder this year. How do they handle little adversity, whether it's Cam Newton or it's a team in general? They're not going 15-1. They had the easiest schedule on paper in the entire league last year. That's not happening again. The out-of-division schedule is pretty tough for the NFC South. I think the whole division is going to be better. I think it's going to be a dogfight between all these teams. I think they'll be in the mix. How do the Panthers handle that? And that's why it's underrated how good this division is.
I think
2-1.
Right on my sheet here, I almost want this. How do the Panthers handle season where everything doesn't go right? Because everything up until the Super Bowl went perfectly right for Carolina last year, and there's already been whispers in camp where Rivera said, I have to keep telling these guys that they don't just assume they're going to get back to the Super Bowl, that it's something he's had to talk to a young team about, is it's going to be the same weekly grind as in every other year, minus all the good luck from last year.
My counter to that is, not everything went right. Super Bowl 50 went pretty wrong.
No, I said up till the Super
Bowl.
Yeah,
but my point being, there is that there still should be that driving force within the team. I don't think they'll go soft or anything like that. I think that could make that can fuel them, and maybe they'll continue on the same
path. Are they at the level where the Seahawks and the Patriots are at, and the Cardinals maybe are trying to get to, where they're one of the teams each and every year? I think they're set up to possibly be it. That is hard to pull off. There's only a couple teams like that.
I think just their defense is head and shoulders above everyone else in this division. I think that is what's going to – we'll get to it later when I say something. But that's where I think they're going to be so much better than the rest.
Mark, that was your underrated storyline?
Well, actually, it blends perfectly into mine.
Okay,
I'll say
ahead.
It quick because what I put here was that Carolina has been the best drafting / developing team in the league east of Arizona. They have. And it's Funchess, Kelvin Benjamin, the way Cam Newton has grown with this coaching staff – they took Michael Orr and made him into a serviceable tackle for most of the season. You got K'Wan Short's star at Lutuleli. It's like they keep drafting players that produce. I haven't even gone through half the list. I mean, they have the chance to be an just as good as they were last season. Forget the record. They could be a better team if they wanted to. They're getting Benjamin back. And the Panthers are legitimate. I don't think that last year was a fluke on
any level.
No, I'm not saying you do, but
I think
people are thinking, oh, you know, anyone can win this division. And it's like, I don't think so. I don't think anyone can win this division.
I just said that. I'm one of those people.
I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah,
I think Carolina's going to win this division.
When you stumble, by the way, when you're 15-1 and you come down to earth a little bit, you could still go 12-4. I mean, this team is that talented where they could not be as good as last year and still be good enough to get a number one seed. What is your underrated storyline, Kevin Patrick?
I wrote two of them down and we've hit them both.
That's good.
Jameis Winston and Calvin Benjamin.
We're in lock.
My underrated storyline is in contrast to Mark, your biggest concern. I think the Saints offense could shred. And I think they have the chance to kind of get back to that Saints level of recent years for the same reasons that Greg mentioned before, all these skill players suddenly around Drew Brees. And then if you look at Drew Brees, and I was with the majority opinion kind of entering last year that, okay, maybe this is kind of decline time a little bit for Drew Brees. But if you look after he came back from that shoulder injury, the last three quarters of the season, he was a monster. He was just as productive as he's ever been. So you put him with this all this talent, and I think he has another couple of years in the tank of big-time play. I think they're going to score a ton of points. I think they could score like over 30 points a game on average.
Well, we thought – we went – last year at this time, we couldn't have been more excited about C.J. Spiller and – you know, they're going to be this run-heavy attack. Mark Ingram and everyone else is just going to blow teams up. And I'm going to hold on and wait this time.
But you know what? I think they're embracing who they really are. Not this smash and dash.
Well, I don't know if that's what it's about.
Mixing them up. But anyway, they're going to air it out, and they're going to throw for a ton of yards. Brees will go over 5,000 again with 40 touchdowns. I see that kind of season.
40 touchdowns.
40 is a lot.
Poor Bucks are an underrated storyline. Barely get mentioned.
Finally.
Pass rush could be better.
Get to the playoffs.
Mark, starting with you, the song that best describes the state of the NFC South. I'm excited for yours, Mark.
Girl, you know I'm hooked on you.
I don't even know what this is. And this is what
I'll do. It's got to be about an offensive coordinator.
It should be.
What? Who do you want to sex up?
Why are all your songs about making love to people?
They're not.
A lot of, sorry,
one was called Touch Myself. There was no other person involved.
I'm too sexy.
All right. How about this? Because I don't agree with Greg's, you know, Joan of Arc campaign about this is the most exciting division in football. It needs to get sexier.
That goes right over my head.
How about get a little sexier? How about show us and prove that you're the most exciting division? I don't buy that at all. Two of these teams play in domes, so they don't even exist to me. And outside of the Panthers, I mean, the three other teams to me just seem like a mishmash of the same thing, a bunch of 7-9 teams ready to disappoint us.
What does this have to do with the song?
Wait, wouldn't the right
sexier. Sex yourselves up.
Wouldn't the song be I Don't Want to Sex You Up?
I think I'm speaking to someone that they would want to like have that kind of relationship with. I don't feel that way about the NFC South. Change my opinion.
It was an anti-song, is what you're saying?
Yes, it was an anti-theme.
I got it. Kevin Patrick, your debut song that best describes the NFC South.
Come on, hold on. It's almost over. Swift speech.
Wow.
Oh, oh!
Turn this up in my headphones.
That was Patrick Barkey. If Patrick was a rapper, he'd be DMX.
Yeah. I'd love DMX.
There was a 100% chance Patrick's song would either be from Eminem or DMX. Today it was DMX. All right, now why?
Because there ain't no way anybody else is keeping up with the Panthers. There's no way. They're just head and shoulders. That defense is going to carry the day. There's just no way that – ain't no way anybody else is going to touch them in that division.
Is that what the song's called? Ain't no way?
Ain't no way.
Nice. See, that connects in a more linear fashion, Mark. Not that yours didn't connect.
Yeah, I don't need to take a shot because I don't – maybe, you know, I was thinking about this division in a different way from a different place.
You know what? That's a good one, Patrick, because mine is very similar. Let's do some piggybacking.
I am a god. Minaj. Hurry up, my damn Minaj.
Get the Porsche out the damn garage. Is this Cam Newton singing this? I
am a God. That's true. We haven't even talked about the defending MVP at all. My whole life in the hand of God.
So y'all better quit playing with God. Soon as they yes, like this is all about Cam Newton. Cam Newton, and he'll be the first to tell you, is a god in the NFL right now. He is in his prime. As Mark said earlier, Devin Funches is ready to make the leap. Kelvin Benjamin's back. Greg Olsen's still in the picture. Jonathan Stewart's still productive. He can do it all. Do you know how many touchdowns Cam Newton had regular season and postseason last year combined, passing and running?
I have a feeling you're going to tell us.
50. 50 touchdowns for this guy, an all-time, not just fantasy season, but quarterback season, and he didn't even really turn it on until the second half of the year. What happens, gentlemen, if Cam Newton picks up where he left off and does this for 16 weeks? And yes, not everything is going to go to script the way it did last year, maybe, but I still think Cam Newton, when it's all said and done, is the type of special, transcendent-type player that lifts a team single-handedly. We're talking about the tiers in the ESPN quarterback rankings that can lift an entire team. Him alone makes this team better than everybody else. That's why the Panthers will continue to rule the South. He's a god.
Can't argue with that.
We're on board.
You could try. What if he gets hurt? He gets hit a lot.
He gets six games against pretty unimposing defenses in this division. That's nice.
Gods don't hurt.
Gods don't get hurt, or they don't hurt people. Gods definitely hurt people.
They do it all. Finally, Greg.
Yeah. Well, you know I had to go.
All right.
Mark does not like this one. Little random choice here. Doe is what I got from the Drought 3 by Little Wayne. You had to go back to New Orleans because that's what Drew Brees is going to have after this year. Doe is what he's got. He's going to make the most crazy Tom Benson contract ever when the Saints win this division this year and they bring it back to New Orleans.
You really think that's going to happen?
I do. I think they're going to win
this
division.
You think with this defense they can win it?
I think
talk about how bad their defense is, really.
I think their defense will be better. We don't need to get into a long spiel about it. I obviously, the injuries to Sheldon Rankins and what's gone on recently, not helpful. But I think the offense is going to be good enough. More to the point, I think the Panthers are going to come back to earth in 10, 11 games. It's going to be right in the mix in this division.
So the number to win the division is 11, though, right?
Yeah, 10, 11.
Okay. I mean, it's not a crazy thought. I think they're going to score a lot of points. Is the defense going to lead to them losing 35-31 a lot? I kind of see that happening still, but maybe. Their defense is okay every third year.
This is the third
year. Yeah, they would be due.
I think without all the Rob Ryan coverage bus where you can't even figure out what the play call is, the secondary actually looks pretty decent on paper. Delvin Bro.
I mean,
the point is that Breeze is going to light the world on fire, like you said, and probably they're going to give him way almost too much money because they let this contract ride out at the end of his career.
Well, that would be a very Mickey Loomis thing to do, as he's attempting to run the New Orleans Pelicans at the same time.
I almost
hand out a giant contract to Drew Brees when he's about to turn 40.
I almost went with a pretty awful song by Lil Wayne where he actually raps about Drew Brees and Marcus Colston. I think he rhymes
a little on the nose.
He rhymes expensive with Tom Benson, which I like.
At least it's not the album where he's playing guitar. All right. Anybody else see more than one playoff team coming out of this division?
No, I don't.
I don't. Do you see?
I do. I think the Panthers and the Saints are playoff.
For me, it would be the Bucks and the Panthers, but I don't. I think it's just Carolina.
Okay. All right. Good division talk, guys. Next up, either tomorrow, Thursday, or early next week, we will tackle the NFC West in our final preview of the National Football Conference. That's it for today's show. Thanks for sitting in, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
Stan Hans is signing off for the mailman, Kevin Patrick, coming at you, the boss, and the Irishman behind the glass. Till Thursday.